We're on.
We're so I know you all, but my audience doesn't. And this is our last podcast of the year. And I thought it was most appropriate to share it with you, Kelly and Kim, to talk about this journey. So during COVID, I started just writing and writing and writing. And I started a personal newsletter, which morphed into providing a ton of resources for persons who don't have equity, who live our life. Because I was often approached to say, well, it's easier for you. And I would say to them, no, everyone lives the same life. Funds provide comfort, access provides more resources, but the life we live is a special life that we're honored to share with people who have similar situations. So this is one of those moments where I get to be with people that share my story. So it's an easy conversation.
Great.
And I would love for you all first both to introduce yourselves and then organically share how you met. I want our audience just to get to know you. And then we'll go from there with questions and we'll take the conversation wherever it goes. So, Kelly, why don't you introduce yourself first?
Well, I am Kelly Mondello. I am mother to three not so young adults. I am co-founder of Learning Independence for Tomorrow and honored to serve as our board chair.
Kim.
And I'm Kim Karizovich, co-founder of Lyft. I have two adult children in their late 20s, hard to believe. And Kelly and I met quite some time ago. I was one of her daughter's teachers. And then Lyft happened, and we've been on this journey ever since.
Well, I have to share, I did not know you all at the time, but my daughter was officially diagnosed in 2012, right as you all were getting up and running.
Yeah.
So I want to say watching you all from a distance as I was making difficult decisions has been just an honor to see the passion for those of you all who watch and support this podcast. These are two dynamic mothers who decided to take action in their own hands and make a place where all kids matter. And not just make a place, but make a spectacular place where kids like ours get to shine and find their best selves. So tell me a little bit about that journey.
I always call it the Reader's Digest version, and I shared at the conference the other day that a Holland moment, as I say, is when you kind of appreciate those special blessings that you get to experience only as someone whose family or child or life is impacted by neurodiversity. And that goes back to the poem by Emily Pearl Kingsley, Welcome to Holland. And we all live in Holland now and appreciate Holland. My Reader's Digest version, and I say the Holland moment is when Morgan said to me, Kim, you don't even know this one. A few weeks ago, she heard me talking about it and she said, why do you always say Reader's Digest version? I said, well, I'm trying to condense it and I'm talking to her about Reader's Digest and the books and the magazine, and I'm explaining Reader's Digest, and she goes, but what does a book about digestion have to do with Lyft?
That's so classic. That's so great.
It's one of those beautiful Holland moments. But the Reader's Digest version is Kim and I were really looking for a solution for our own daughter. So I think it was a little almost not selfish, but we wanted to solve for something that our daughters needed. And Lyft came about because of that. Wasn't working for me for a number of reasons at other settings. And Kim can share what wasn't working for her and for Gina and their family. But along the way, when we decided we were going to do this, we were going to get our daughters through high school and then get them into a transition program so that they could find their independence and really reach their maximum potential. We realized that we were filling a need not just for our daughters, but for the community as well. And as our daughters' needs grew, Lyft organically grew.
Kim, why don't you share for us what Lyft has done for you, particularly as an educator?
Well, I think it's changed my whole viewpoint as an educator. I've always been in special education, and Then I had my daughter and really realized how much I didn't know about special education, specifically that every student is different. Every student brings their own gifts to the table, and it's really valuing who they are and empowering them to embrace who they are and grow with that. So not that you need to be fixed, but just that we're going to start where you're at, where you are at, and then take you to the next level. And really believing that neurodiversity means we're all neurodiverse. We all have something that's different from somebody else. And so what is it going to take to make education or work or whatever it might be work for you? Living independently, that's different for everybody. So really having and changing that mindset that there's no one right way, that you might have 15 students in your class and it might be 15 different ways. So really embracing that concept and looking at each person as a person and what do they need to succeed. I would say it's been pretty successful.
In the beginning, how was it gathering community support? I know sometimes in my individual capacity, I have a hard time sometimes explaining to the public or people who don't have, again, similar lifestyles, what it's like and why so many resources are needed. What was it like in the beginning and how is it now with community resources and support?
Well, I think that in the beginning, my goal was really if I could change the way one person thought about a person with a neurodiversity, I've checked that box. And really what I've learned is it's not about me changing. It's about the people getting out in the community, our students getting out in the community, and the community embracing them. And the more opportunities we have had, it's organically happened. It's really not about us. We can speak about Lyft till the cows come home, really. But when you know our students and you see what they're doing and you listen to what they have to say, that's opened doors for us. And in my own personal life, it's the same way. Give you a very quick example of that. My daughter wanted to join a typical arts group, and it was with improv. And I said, well, you know, you're the only person there with special needs, so I don't know that they're really going to let you go. She goes, well, I'll never know until I try. I'm like, okay. So I didn't make the phone call. And next thing I know, I get an email from them saying, yeah, we'd love to have you join. And so I called and I said, let me tell you a little bit about my daughter. And she said, we're okay with that. So she's actually done that twice on her own. And improv is very hard. And it's not that she does it like it's supposed to be, but she does it the way it works for her. And it's not that I've opened any doors. She has opened those doors herself. The people in the class have embraced her. And we sat there with our mouths open, just watching what she's able to do. So I think as a parent, giving your student as many resources as they can to feel good about themselves and to accept who they are, they do it. If they want it, they will go after it. And it works.
And I would add that I believe that the community has always, we've had a really welcoming and beautiful community that's always embraced Lyft and our mission. Clearly, as we become more educated as a society and as the number of individuals identified neurodiverse, neurodivergent with autism, the community continues to embrace and support us as an organization. I think, like I said, as a society, we are starting to understand neurodiversity. We're really talking now about diversity, equity, inclusion. So it's probably the best time in our history to have the autism diagnosis or to have to be neurodiverse because it's something that we're really talking about. And I think we need to continue to do that.
So you all embarked on a transition program and it's been very successful. What do you think you've learned most about leaving the K-12 environment, and especially that you have children who are now adults or young adults transitioning to that next phase that you think you could share with other parents?
So I would say that there is a huge jump when you leave 12th grade and you go into the world, or for us, a transition program. There's a lot more independence that's expected of the young adult. And in our program especially, you have 4 years to kind of grow into who you are and have different experiences to figure out what really works for you and what you really enjoy doing. So it was not an easy transition. You think that in the high school that you really are gearing towards independence. And then even in our own program, you get in there and you're like, wow, what did I miss? So it's definitely a growing situation for the student, but even for the family to be able to let go and let them do more and trust them to do more. And it's a wonderful experience. And not just in education, it's independence. It's doing things in your own household, making your own doctor's appointments, calling in prescriptions, doing your own laundry, making your own meals, grocery shopping. Every little thing you would do as a parent, our students sometimes need help learning those skills. So giving them the opportunity, not just at school, not just in the transition program, but also at home is very important.
And 100% agree with all of that. And to also realize that our adult children have the same desires and want independence and want all the same things that neurotypical peers want. It just looks a little different. And the timing might be a little different. So we have a four-year transition program, but that doesn't mean that our children are ready to be completely on their own. So there's a lot, the biggest lesson that I've learned is patience. And I have three different children that all have different needs and grow at different stages. And my Morgan, the one with autism, is no different. In some regards, she's more mature in certain areas. And then there's a lot of things that, you know, I have to remind her, things that I wouldn't remind my neurotypical children. But I think one thing is that frustrates me is that we offer a four-year college experience, or I say we, as in society, offers a four-year college program when you graduate high school. It's just kind of the norm. Then you go on to college, or you go on to VOTech or something like that, and it's a four-year program. But then we have our babies with neurodiversity, and the programs are typically 2 years. And I don't understand why all transition programs are not expected to be the same as neurotypical programs. So as like societal wise, that's always been something that frustrates me. So we were very intentional in making the Lyft University transition program 4 years. And then we recognized some of our adult learners that are graduating from the university program, they're still not ready to leave a setting that's continuing to provide social skills and academics and functional nature and career skills. So then we added on to that our micro businesses, and they're kind of immersed with our university transition program. So they have their community there. But my biggest takeaway from raising a daughter with neurodiversity is you have to have patience and a sense of humor.
I would agree with both of those sentiments. I would add that I think we should start early with transition, like as early as 16. You know, the idea that we're transitioning our children and teens later is very interesting, because you start really listening to them, I think, at this age, and hearing what their desires are versus what your desires for them were or right. continue to be. And so then that becomes a challenge with separating yourself out from, as to your point, Kim, of, you know, and to your point, Kelly, about independence and individual desires and honoring that. So you guys have made 10 years of Lyft. That's a big deal. It's a big deal. Applause, applause. If I could scream and do my little happy hands, it's a big deal. So what does Lyft look like now in the next 10 years?
Oh, wow. That's exciting. It's super exciting right now. We have purchased 7 acres in mid Pinellas County in Clearwater and a 60,000 square foot building that we are currently renovating so that we can quadruple the number of learners that we serve. And gosh, there's so much going on there that I have to kind of sometimes slow down my thought process. And our Kim's successor, Sean Noggle's our new executive director, and he's always like, slow your roll, Kelly. but I see, again, more learners. I see us leading in the space of neurodiversity for the Tampa Bay community. We're already out educating businesses and families and all kinds of stuff. We have a culinary teaching kitchen that we are building. So I see our Lift Your Fork catering program growing. We're going to have a community cafe. So we'll be training baristas and young adults in the hospitality industry. I see residential down the road.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Absolutely.
Yes. And I know Kim's spearheading that one for us. So I'll let her, I don't want to steal her thunder. But I just see us being a hub for any families impacted by neurodiversity. I see them using Lyft as a resource.
And I would agree with everything that Kelly says. And in addition to that, we are at the very beginning stages of looking at what a residential community looks like and what the family's needs are. My personal thought is, you know, we get our students in right now, some of them at kindergarten, and right now we go through our day program to whatever age they want. But eventually our students will age, and I've seen some phenomenal programs that work with these people through their ages, because it's not that they can just go into any setting in the hospital or even as they age into assisted living. They have to be in a facility that understands who they are, what they are, what their needs are. And that's not always the same, because you want them, as we want to honor them now in what their desires are, we want to honor them also as they age. So I see Lyft as being on that continuum, providing everything that these students need. So we have very, very much long range goals ahead for Lyft.
I'm so excited to hear you say that. I have said that nonstop. When I always do soft polls with parents. I sit on a national board myself, the Council of Parents, Attorneys, and Advocates for Those with Disabilities. And we do all these polls, internal polls with each other. A lot of us have children on the spectrum or varying other neurodiverse strengths, and we always talk about, and because many of us are attorneys, we support and advocate for others who have challenges, and that is the number one challenge parents have, regardless of income, race, gender, etc. They've done exceptional jobs raising their kids and getting them to adulthood, and then they say, and now what? And they get into their 60s and they're fatigued genuinely, and they don't have anyone to pass on the advocacy, request supports, and then they're placing their trust into often estate planners and trustees and guardians that they do not know, that may not have been on the journey, are educated, but do not know the desires of their loved ones. So I'm really glad to hear you say that, because that's, you know, definitely something that's needed for the community as we all age. I always think about Dr. Sue Blanchard, who was one of my mentors here. And the reason why I'm so wedded to the college, because she was very interested in educating the community. And the one thing she always says is that we want taxpayers, not tax takers. And it's important to understand that everyone has the ability to shine. I'm going to leave with one last question, and that is what I'm always asked. What would you say now to a person who shares our journey that you know now, that you did not know when you started?
I would say Kimberly Jackson.
That's true. I think I've met a lot of fantastic parents that really has shaped the way I think. It's not just about me, and it's not just about my daughter. Everybody's on this journey together and really embracing the families to walk together, because it's, I may know one little part, but you may know another little part that could help me as well. So I'm really embracing parents as a very much needed part of the journey we're all on.
Truly, it's been a pleasure to get to know you. Gosh, there's so many people that have changed the last decade of my life that contribute to LIFT's growth. Recently, we had at the RISE Awards, which is an event that recognizes individuals in our community who've done amazing things. And one of our award recipients was Elizabeth Bonker. And just getting to know her and her mom, she was a valedictorian at Rawlings College, and she's a non-speaking adult with autism. And I mean, truly, in about the past 2 months, I have learned so much about what I used to say was nonverbal autism, but it's not, because people on the spectrum that do not speak still have a lot to say. So I've learned a lot in that area. I have tragically one area that I just also recently learned about, sitting in a conference about adults with autism. I did not realize until recently that those on the autism spectrum have a life expectancy of 60 to 65. And I think that's tragic. And the reason that I learned that that exists is because when the parents pass away, they don't have advocates. And if we've not empowered our children who turn into adults with the skills to advocate for themselves, it equates to poor healthcare. And doctors who, and they were on this at this conference, a lot of doctors don't know how to communicate with adults on the spectrum. And so there's a communication gap there. So there's just so many nuggets of information I have learned along the way, and hope to share, if for no other reason, to open the eyes of and the ears of anyone listening, and you know, help us all become better advocates.
Well, I'm going to add to you all's list. Not like you don't have enough to do, but I think we need a parent conference at some point, where everyone can share their personal best practices, not necessarily from experts, but as expert parents. It has been such a pleasure talking with you all. I learn something every time I speak to another person who shares our story, but I want to say to the people who support families like ours, it is it's a constant, continual education process. Correct. And that is really the beauty of the journey. I cannot say how infinitely I've changed as a human being because of this journey and the lives that maybe I would not have touched but for being a parent of a neurodiverse person. And so I'm very grateful to share this space with you all. Thank you for giving me your time. Congratulations on 10 years of true advocacy, putting words with deeds, actions, to me is so important to our life goal here on earth. So thank you so much for everything you do. And I can't wait to see what you do in the next 10 years.
Thank you, Kimberly.
Thank you.
Yeah, this was a true honor to be doing this with you. And it's always an honor to do anything with Kim.
Thank you.
Thank you. Same right back at you, sister.